Hi, everybody. My name's Darren. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
Darren. Woo, that was nice, wasn't it? Jeez. I think he overshot the mark there a little bit. Thank you, yes. Friends for life, I think. What a great convention this is. What a vibe. What a great speakers. Just amazing. I want to thank Chris and especially Ben for inviting me over here. Gabe for looking after me. And picking me up from the airport and doing all that good stuff. I was getting emotional through the sobriety countdown. Don't know what's wrong with me. Never usually happens that, but that was just, I love this thing, man. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with a passion. And I've got to tell you right from the gate, this is the only conference I've ever been to where you lot speak funnier than me. I need a sign language interpreter for, what's going on with you. And we're going to have some fun with her in a minute, you'll see. I can't wait to see how she interprets some of the shit I'm going to say. You have no idea. I want you to know right away I'm the worst drunk I've ever met. I cannot believe I'm sober. I can't believe I'm sober and I'm happy. Isn't that weird? Isn't that weird, especially for the newcomers? Isn't it weird? Sober and happy? That doesn't make sense. Isn't that why we get drunk again? Because sobriety sucks, doesn't it? When you're new, it sucks. It did for me. That's why we drink again. That's why you get high again. But if you've just come out of the lockdown psychiatric unit, one more time, the most insane thing you could do would be to pick up another drink. Yet there he is, all lit up again. That's my only solution. My alcoholism needs treating. And I can either treat it with vodka, or I can treat it with the big book and the 12 steps. You know, I love the effect produced by alcohol. And now I love the effect produced by the big book and the first 164 pages and the 12 steps. That is what it's all about. Thank you. I want to give a little shout out to my girl. I came here with my girl. We met about a month ago or something. And but hey, she got ill last night. She got sick. We came here last night. She got very sick. We'd barely slept at all, 20 minutes at a time, and she was doubled over in agony and abdominal pains, and she got up, she was throwing up, came back to bed, and it was just like, it was awful all night. She's a tough cookie. If that was me, I'm a bit of a pussy. If that was me, I get man flu, you know what I mean? I'm out for the count. And we put up with this all night, I couldn't believe it. And then at 6 a.m., I said, we're calling someone, And we had to call an ambulance. We called an ambulance and took us to University of Kentucky Hospital. And we were there all day. And they're keeping her in, so she's staying overnight. She's with me right here, but because she didn't want to miss this. That's what a trooper she is. So we can all give Charlene our best wishes. That'd be wonderful. Thank you. There you go. She is a trooper. I only met her about a month ago and I've almost fucking killed her. Jesus Christ. Can't take me anywhere. I didn't know Alcoholics Anonymous was going to be fun like this. I didn't know it was going to be a vibe and a vast amount of fun about it all. I thought it's going to be lame as can be. Isn't it for losers and for quitters and for weirdos you don't want to hang out with? Have you not seen it on the telly? Someone will explain that to you if you don't know what I mean. I've seen it on the telly. It's awful. It's like 14 bald, fat, ugly men in a circle in a smoky-filled, miserable room, and one of them might be like a week sober and they're all clapping and crying and shit. I'm like, oh my God, I never want to end up there. Have you seen it? They depict it so badly. And then towards the end of me drinking, that's the only place people are telling me to go. Like friends and family, they hadn't spoke to me in over a year. Their last words were, you need to go to a 12-step program. You need to go. Then finally, the rounds of hospitals and jails and sanitariums, they're all telling me, the psychiatrist and the therapist, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, Darren. There's nothing we can do for you. And I'm like, listen, no. You don't understand, mate. You don't understand. I'm already suicidally depressed. Were you trying to, like, finish me off quicker or something? It doesn't make any sense. Plus, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I don't think I'm an alcoholic because I have a preconceived notion of what it means to be an alcoholic. I know what it looks like. It's the bum on the end of an off-ramp, begging for change with a sign with an awful bushy beard. Not a cool bushy beard like yours. An awful, ugly bushy beard. So I don't look like an alcoholic. And I used to be good at drinking and drugs, by the way. But I don't look like an alcoholic. You lot don't look like an alcoholic. You're either too young, you're too beautiful, you're too well put together, you're too businesslike. Well, some of you look like you've had a good drink. But, you know, I don't look like an alcoholic. It doesn't make sense. But now I understand what it means to be alcoholic. And so I didn't want to come here at all. This is the last house on the block. And it seems to work a little bit better when it's like that, doesn't it? And it was the last house on the block. I was already in America at this time. By the way, alcohol, you know, I was born in Manchester, England. That's why I'm talking funny. It's not the alcohol, right? I'm not having a stroke up here, I swear to God. But I was cornered by alcohol. I had quicksand stretching all around me. I'd met my match and I'm in a shitty room in a crappy house on the west side of town in Santa Barbara, California. And I am at death's door. And I'd been suicidal on awakening for as long as I can remember. It was midnight. I was maudlin drunk yet again. So there's only one more thing to do before I kill myself. That's to call, reach out for Alcoholics Anonymous. So I found the Yellow Pages. And you younguns will have to Google that, won't you? I found the Yellow Pages. I could not find the name Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how drunk I was. Darren, it's in the beginning of the book under AA. And I called and this beautiful older lady answered the phone. She was so kind to me. She was so good to me, so good at her job. And I got right to it and said, yes, lady, I might drink too much, but so would you if what's happened to me had happened to you. And I'm going to kill myself. And she talked me down and off the ledge every single time. And the conversation went on and on and on. And she said, hey, Darren, have you never been to an AA meeting? I said, no. She said, well, Darren, amazingly, there's a meeting down the road from you tomorrow night. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock? She made it sound so special. She did. I didn't know there was 200 meetings in Santa Barbara every week. And so I passed out. I came to the next day. Oh, I was so bad. I was so hungover. So cornered. I remembered that meeting. I remember the conversation with her. Now, I can't say I didn't have a drink that day. Listen, if I'm going to leave my bedroom, let alone my house, I have to have a cheeky bit of vodka in me. You know what I mean? Especially if I'm doing something really weird. Like interacting with another human. And I've definitely got to have some in me. And so I showered for the first time. Toughed it out all afternoon, just had a little bit. I showered for the first time in months. Oh, and I gelled my hair all sexy like I used to be able to back then. And I went wandering down to this AA meeting. And it was just like this, not like I'd seen on the TV. It was just like this. It was a big men's meeting, actually. It was a men's stag. 80 or 90 men in this meeting hall. There was a vibe, there was laughter, there was fun, just like there is in here. And I'm thinking, wow, this is weird. This is not like I thought it would be. Now, people are all interacting with each other. Someone had gotten a promotion at work and they're all stoked. Someone else had gotten engaged and they're all happy and slapping each other on the back. Now, I'm not interacting with these people, obviously. I'm sat on my own and out of the way because I don't want to catch anything from these happy folks. You know what I mean? And so... And I was just mesmerized with a vast amount of fun about it all. And then what happened next really captured my attention. Just underneath, the deadly earnestness kicked in. The secretary got his papers, shuffled them, sat down, looked like he meant business. Everybody caught the cue. Everybody shut up. got off their phones, and 80 or 90 men sat in two huge circles. And then the meeting began. And I thought, oh, wow, this is crazy. And as the meeting began, I thought, this is a good time to open my jacket pocket. I pulled out a big bottle of vodka and started drinking in the meeting. And the guy, I swear to God, and the guy next to me is like, holy shit. This guy's drinking vodka in the meeting. I was astounded that nobody else was drinking. I'm like, wait a minute, don't you have a drinking problem? I have a really bad drinking problem. I stayed drunk in the rooms in Santa Barbara for a year. For a year, dude. For 3 months openly drinking from my vodka bottle. 3 months. I got quite the reputation, tell you what. But I was welcomed. It took, after 3 months, I realised what you cheeky monkeys were doing. You lot were putting your vodka in a water bottle beforehand and then coming to the meeting. You could have told me. Oh my God. I couldn't believe it. Now, it wasn't always like that. I started drinking when I was 13. I started drinking in England at 13. Now, I thought someone's going to fall off the chair here. Gabe's going to fall off the chair. 13, oh my God, that's amazingly young. No. Not in Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't ever try and get one over somebody else in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know some of these people over here are like, I was drinking when I was 8. Okay. What? You can't outdo anybody in the rooms over here. Listen, there's this one woman speaker. She gives a great talk. She's based out of LA. But her whole pitch surrounds the fact that she was drunk in her addicted mother's womb. In the womb. Holy shit, Teresa. You win. You win. Nobody can outdo that. Don't ever try and outdo anybody. Now, I'm a weekend warrior at age 13. That's just what you do in England. You start drinking. I didn't just try it. I was a weekend warrior from 13 onwards. And I was good at drinking for a little bit there. Was anyone else any good at it? Like any party animals? Some people don't like it if you've had a bit of fun drinking. It's like, don't worry, mate. I do end up ruining my life and wanting to kill myself. We're going to get there. But I had a good time through my teenage years. And I got out of high school and I went to college and I went to university. And I was a bit of a party animal. Now this is Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm going to talk about alcoholism. But I did try cocaine once. For 20 years. I love that shit. I love amphetamines. I love speed. I love anything that will allow me to drink you under the table. My mates didn't know what was going on. I was speeding my head off, out drinking them all like, Darren's an animal, dude. I'm like, yeah, I'm an animal. You need an elephant gun to dart me down. You know what I mean? I'm just having a good time. Alcohol used to make me feel like Superman. The effect produced by alcohol is electric, man. You put enough pints in me, I'm like a mixture between James Bond, Dave Chappelle and Harry fucking Potter. I'm going to have a good time. But then, what happens is then I graduated from university and I became a business owner with my brother. Now, we made a great team. I was age 22, left university, and we fought. And he was already a somewhat successful businessman. He's 6 years older than me. And he had this idea for a new business. And I was about to become a boring school teacher. Oh, my God. And don't we always want to put off real life as long as we possibly can? Real life means working a job you don't really like and settling down and living with someone you don't really like. And then you can, you know, so I wanted to put that off, and thank God he saved me. And we became a partnership in like an insurance firm. We bought some vehicles, and he was an insurance auto agency. And anytime one of his clients had an accident that wasn't their fault, I was going to go and take over the claim and give them a replacement vehicle. And it was a brilliant concept. We charged the at-fault person's insurance company a lot of money to rent my kind of not too good of a vehicle for like a month or two. It was brilliant. Now, we made a great team because my brother's a brilliant, like, businessman. And I'm a really good bullshitter. like you lot. We'll call him the marketing director. So we made a formidable team, and you know, we were, and I didn't like to look bad or look, you know, I was all about looking good. The banker watched with amused scepticism. I've willed some fat checks in and out of his account. But this is when alcoholism starts to come in. You know, a few years in, we've got dozens of people working for us. We've got a fleet of 70 or 80 vehicles. We have outstanding invoices of almost $2 million. I had arrived. You know, I'm driving a nice sports car, and I've got Miss Manchester on my arm, and everything's going good. From the outside looking in, everything looks great. Not a cloud on the horizon. But alcoholism in my mid to later 20s starts to take its grip. And alcoholism comes in the form of massive amounts of anxiety. Alcoholism is subtle and progressive. I don't just wake up one day looking like the loser alcoholic drinking neat vodka. It's subtle and progressive, and it comes in the form of massive amounts of anxiety. And it comes in the form of massive amounts of depression. And it comes in the form of this spiritual illness which is trying to eat me alive from the inside out. My soul's becoming ever blacker, and it will soon be nothing but ash. And alcoholism just wants to do one thing, wants to separate me from you, get me on my own, and kill me. That's what it wants to do with us, with the real alcoholic. It is a nightmare. But as the thing progresses, the best description I can give alcoholism is something really weird starts to happen to me. Really weird, like I used to be confident and outgoing, and I was becoming like shy and a little introverted. I didn't like it when you looked at me too closely. And I definitely didn't want you to know I had anxiety, because what would we do? We got to put a front on. I got a second full-time job at this stage of my alcoholism, but I'm starting to slowly die from the inside out, from the sickness. My second full-time job was to run around Manchester making sure you thought I was okay. Because if I can make sure you think I'm okay, maybe I'll be okay. And only another alcoholic will understand that. I am just having panic. Now, at night time, I'm having a good time. Alcohol works like a charm. It's during the day sober when alcoholism really starts to take its grip. And I'm going into work with the worst hangover you could possibly imagine. Remember one time I was supposed to put some checks in the bank. Now, I would never make it into a Monday morning on time. Was anyone else's weekend longer than their week? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, no shit. So I never made it in on Monday mornings. Now, I was the boss of my business, so I got away with a lot. I got away with a lot. But there's always somebody who's onto us. And my brother was onto me, let me tell you. And I've never been in on a Monday, and it used to kill him and annoy him. I'd pretend I was up and busy at work, and I wasn't. I was just having a nightmare hangover, boiled as an owl. And so, you know, this one Monday morning, though, oh, I had to present these checks. I were in big trouble, so I don't know how I managed it. I got out of bed, got dressed in my suit, got in my car, drove down to the bank in my nice sports car. Now, I can see the entrance to the bank. I cannot get out of my car because I'm paralyzed with fear. I'm paralyzed with fear, and I've drunk so much hard alcohol, I've done so many drugs, I've ruined my wiring. And only another alcoholic will understand that. I'm going to have a nervous mental breakdown any minute. But I think to myself, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to open the door. I'm going to scurry off into the entrance of the bank like the rat I am. And if the sunlight doesn't shatter me into a million pieces, maybe I'll be okay. And I go into the bank, and there's a goddamn queue in the front of the place. I can't just... That's a line, by the way. And there's a line, and I'm stood there because I just want to get in, take care of business, and get out. And I'm stood there losing my... You remember that feeling? I'm losing my mind, man. And I know they're looking at me, these two women over here. They're looking at me and talking about me. And this guy knows something's up in front of me. And I'm just losing it. And I'm worried that any moment someone's going to just turn around and go straight up to me and go, "Hey, wow, what's wrong with you?" And I'd be like, "I don't know. Do you know? Because I don't know." And then I'd just leave. I'd leave. I'm always ready to just leave. Things got so bad, we ended up having another... We used to have these boardroom meetings. We were a small company, but there was four directors, little shareholding company. And we had there was four of us in this boardroom. I hated these things, man. I hated them. And as the meeting starts, I'm not paying attention like usual until my brother says, right, Darren, we've had a meeting before this meeting. We've made a team decision that we're going to let you go. And I went, wait, what? I didn't know you could do that. Only an alcoholic can get fired from a business he started, right? Only we can put... And I said, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, Darren, there's something wrong with you. We're not sure what's going on, but you're obviously not interested in this. And I started to get angry because I was fearful. All my fears were starting to play out. I got so angry, and I knew he's clever and he's got it all sewn up. So I went for him. I kicked the table over and went to give him a flying headbutt. You know what I mean? Hey, I believe in clear communication. The finance director tackles me, and it's just an awful scene. An awful scene where Darren's been found out. The mask has slipped. We've all had that, right? Like the covers have been pulled back, and there he is. Look at that little Englishman right there. Now, this is the worst time to exit the business, by the way. Of course it is. I have to leave my car there. They're going to cut me a crappy check in about a month. And I walk home dejected and miserable, as depressed as can be, not knowing what's going on and why. And I get home and it's a Thursday night. Now, I've already arranged to go out with my friends that night, but I'm a broken man at this point. But here's the effect produced by alcohol. I go to the pub before all my friends get there because the only thing I'm concerned about is changing the narrative. You can't be talking poorly about me. Who was there? Who witnessed what went on? There's only three other people. I've got to change the storyline. And so I get to the bar before all my friends, and I have a couple of stiff drinks, and woof! The old fierce determination to win came right back. Right back there and then. And here comes my mate Simon, and here comes my mate Dave, and I said, did you hear about that today with my brother? My brother's a wanker, dude. I built that business up from my bedroom. I did this, and he kind of bought it. And so I'm just going on. And by this time, 15 other friends come in, and I've got a bit of an audience, and I've had another drink or two. And I said, yeah, I can do anything I put my mind to. I don't need any one of them. I told them where to shove the business, right? Completely trying to change. And they bought it. I was so happy. And I said to them, I said, hey, you know, when I was a student, I used to love traveling. I think I'm going to go traveling again. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to America, and I'm going to become president or some shit. Hey, apparently any mugger could become president over here. Right? I think the problem is the shitty UK weather. I think the problem is my brother. He's a right wanker. I think the problem is my girlfriend. She keeps leaving me for stupid little things like my cheating on her and stuff. Well, no. Somebody puts the problem on a plane at Manchester International Airport and flies him all the way to LAX. And here I am. And a cousin I'd never met before that's been here 20 years picks me up. He picks me up. This guy owns the English bar in downtown Santa Barbara, California. See, there is a God. All my thoughts and wishes of, like, toning it down. Darren, stop doing drugs. Don't do so much Jägermeister. Don't do this. Don't do that. All go out the window. And I become a daily drinker without even knowing it. I came to America for a two-week holiday 24 years ago. I never made it back to England. I swear to God. I didn't know I was going to almost die of untreated alcoholism. I didn't know I was going to circle the drain of life. I'm coming here just to take the edge off. My visa waiver allows me to stay for 90 days. So I'm here for 90 days, and when I'm on holiday, I like to have a drink. I've got the money that they paid me out from the business. I'm in California. I couldn't believe it's sunny all the time. It's the exact opposite to England. And so I'm having a good time. Now, my lack of responsibilities are really going to mask my alcoholism. Because if you think about it, staying drunk isn't a problem for me. Staying drunk or high or whatever your deal is isn't a problem for most of us. It's facing life sober that is the real problem for any real alcoholic. Now, us staying drunk, it's a problem for other people, of course. It's a problem for the authorities. It's a problem for bosses. Spouses don't seem to like it. But I'm partying, man, for 90 days straight. As I'm contemplating what to do next, a friend from England flies over. So I outstay my visa, I buy an SUV, and me and him go and travel around the whole of America for 5 months. 12,000 miles, 32 states around the map of America, trip of a lifetime. I am drunk as a skunk in every little town, city, and state. I barely remember it. I remember Graceland. That was awesome. I remember Graceland. But by the time we got back to Santa Barbara 5 months later, I had 7 outstanding warrants in 5 different states. That means I had a good time. I had a really good time. Now, my friend, who's normal, he flies back to England to get on with his life. And what do? I become a drunk bartender. I become a drunk bartender at my cousin's pub. And I am hanging on by a thread. By a thread, dude. How some of us go about what we have to... Normal people couldn't do what we do for a weekend. They couldn't do it. The book says we stood at the turning point. I freaking lived at the turning point. For 2 years of bartending. 2 years of just like overthinking, anxiety ridden. Going, you know, here's like a typical day for me. I would come to... And the bed's wet through. Jägermeister is coming out of every pore. And I'm like, oh my God, I am going to die today. This is outrageous. And I'm thinking to myself, shit, what did I do yesterday? Did I even work? Because I'm getting drunk on my days off just as bad as I'm getting drunk on the job. I'm the drunkest person in the bar and I'm the bartender. And I'd have a shadowy recollection of, oh my God, yeah, you were at work yesterday and you couldn't reconcile the till, you yelled at all the customers to get out, then you got blacked out and you remember they put you on a stool in the corner of the bar and I was watching them serving each other, giving money to each other and everything, and I'm thinking, this ain't right. How I never lost this man his bar, I'll never know. And I'm sat on the end of the bed going, what? I knew I wasn't normal anymore. I knew there was desperately something badly wrong with me. And I'm thinking to myself, you used to be a businessman. Other people relied on you for things. And I'm like, and I'm desperate. I need a drink. And I'm about to have a nervous mental breakdown. I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, please. It's 9 a.m. You usually have to be at work at 9:30 to clean up and stuff. And I'm thinking, well, please don't be a Wednesday because I've got to be at work on a Wednesday. And I look and go, oh my God, it's Wednesday. And I've got to be at work in half an hour. You remember feeling like that? And I've got to jump in the shower. I get on my bike because I don't want another DUI. I'm bombing it down State Street. Now, huge delivery trucks are coming up the other way. Oh, and I fantasize about just driving under one of them. And it will look like an accident. And only you know what I mean by that. And I would make it, because I have a plan. My plan is to go to Dargan's Irish pub to get a cheeky drink in me before crossing the road to the English bar and going to work. Seems logical to me. And I make it down to Dargan's Irish pub. I put my bike on the hedge. Now, as I'm holding the door handle, within a nanosecond I've changed my mind 6 times. Just go out onto State Street and kill yourself. No, not now. And I'd open the door to the usual scene, a big empty Dargan's Irish pub. And it's a Wednesday. There's beautiful Yvonne cleaning the beer pumps. I never cleaned anything in my bar. Nothing. Cleaning the beer pumps. Now, Yvonne was beautiful, way out of my league. I used to love me some Yvonne. And she's just cleaning up and all that. Now, all the way down, I'm thinking, how can I make it look normal to have a drink? Who else needs a drink at 9:20 in the morning? It can't look desperate. I have to pretend everything's okay, and I'm walking up there, and I'm thinking how to get a drink, and she looks my way, and I look her way, and she said, Jesus, Darren, how you doing, young fella? I said, Yvonne, I've got to go to work, and I'm feeling a bit rough, actually. I went out last night, and I shouldn't have gone out, and I think I'm sick. I take this Wednesday off, but I've taken the previous 14 Wednesdays off with a hangover so bad, most normal people would dial 911. And I'm trying to finagle a drink in, and she said to me magically, would you like a pint? I said, oh yes. Oh, yes. Now it's like her idea. My kind of weighing it up. You're thinking of nothing else. Now, here's the problem. I don't think I can wait the 30 seconds it's going to take her to pour this thing. I really don't. I'm losing my mind. And she slowly waltzes behind the bar. And I'm like, oh, my God, could you hurry up a little bit? And she's pouring the drink. And then she'd look my way and I go, hey, I'm good. She gives me the pint, but she brings it over, but she puts it right in front of me and stands there looking right at me, you know, like she wants to chit-chat or some shit. And I just want to pull my knife out and stab her in the neck, get that awkward human bit over with, and I finish my pint, I drink my pint, whoa, 3 seconds flat, man. But it's not quite done the trick, it's not strong enough, it's not quite done the trick, and I'm like, I can't do it. I'm going to have to tell him I'm sick. I don't know. She can see what's going on with me. And she said, would you like a Jaeger? Oh, yes. I said, oh, yeah. She doesn't bother with a little shot glass bullshit. She gives me a tumbler full of that stuff. And I feel good just watching her pour that sucker all the way to the top. Yo. And I get that and I glug it down. Glug, 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 glug. Woof. Wow! Well, hey! What was the problem? What was the goddamn problem? I've gone from a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck to a man brimming over with self-reliance in 30 seconds. Now I'm going to go to my bar. I own it, man, by the way. I'm going to go to my bar. I'll probably come back on my break to Shaggy Yvonne later. I want to see that one. If she's lucky, that is, if Yvonne is lucky, I will do that. And so I go to my bar and I start to have a little cheeky drink because I've set off the phenomenon of craving, and there I am, all lit up again, the drunkest person in the bar, passed out. I come to the next morning to 6 missed calls, all from me boss, all from me cousin. I answer the 7th one, get down here now. Oh my God, the gig is up. The covers have been pulled back again. The mask has slipped. I had a job where you're allowed to have a little bit of a cheeky drink. And I even screwed that up. And I go down to the bar. I'm crying. Please don't let me go. Please. This was 10 times worse than losing my entrepreneurial position. I knew it was over. He said, Darren, you'll never work in this bar ever again. You're lucky I've never lost this bar. And he said I could come in, but I'm not allowed to work there ever again. And I go and tie one on that night. I tie one on. I'm so literally depressed. I go back to my bar the next day, drunk, to see who took my shift. And I threw a pint over him. How to ostracize yourself from everybody in a nanosecond. Only us alcoholics can achieve something like that. Darren, you get out and I never want to see your face here ever again. And it took me about 2 weeks drinking to die. 2 weeks to get barred from every pub in downtown Santa Barbara. James Joyce, O'Malley's, Old Kings Road, The Sportsman. Very difficult to get barred from there. And we managed that as well. Now I'm just living to drink. I haven't seen anybody for months. I'm living in a shitty room in a crappy house on the west side of town. 3 other people share the house with me. They're all in the bartending industry. I have an entrance at the back of the house to my bedroom and bathroom because they want nothing to do with me, and that's fine by me. You know, so I just haven't seen. Here's a typical day for me. I would come to, and it would be pitch black outside. And I have no idea whether it's night or day. And I figured out, oh my God, it's 5 a.m., that darkest hour before the dawn. Now I have strong, horrible, warm vodka under my bed because I'm going to need it at first daylight. But I so desperately didn't want to drink it. I didn't want to drink it because I knew what that meant. But the mental and hellish torture is so bad I can only wait about 10 minutes. 10 minutes of back and forth. 10 minutes of do it, don't do it, you got to do it. I'm going to look. You know, we've drunk so much hard alcohol, I've cracked my mind. Never mind ruining my wiring, I've cracked my mind and I need to be dumbed down now. That's why suicide's such a good option. I just need to be gone now. Now, I'm drinking from tall bottles of vodka, and I always have four fingers left in the bottom of it. I need that because it's like a science project. That is exactly what I will need to get well in the morning. And after 10 minutes of hearing voices, I'm interacting with voices, I'm hearing my name shouted from outside in the darkness under the bed. I am losing my mind. I will drink that vodka not to become Superman anymore. I will drink that and it will just dumb the cracked mind down enough to not have to deal with the suicidal thoughts. It will give me just enough relief. You know when we say the drink stops working? The drink never stops working. Never stops working. It will give you immense immediate relief. But then you're immediately screwed. It will immediately fix me, then I am immediately screwed. And now the game is on. I've just drank that. It's not even 6 a.m. and I've finished that bottle of vodka. But here's the problem. I've just fed the beast. And now the beast needs feeding. And I would put on my smelly, baggy clothing to go less than one block to Foodland liquor store to steal two big bottles of vodka. Now, you know, one time I was going to Foodland and I caught my reflection in a huge shopfront window. And it was so outrageous I came back to take another look like. I go right up to the window and I've got a big ass bushy beard. My hair is matted down and everywhere. I'm sunken down, I'm yellow with jaundice. I look 15 years older than I should have. And I remember I said to my reflection and muttered to myself, I said, wow, I'd better not tell anyone about that. And carried on to Foodland. I'd steal me two big bottles of vodka and go clinking off home. Now, you can't just go home and pound the vodka like you want to pass out. No. It's like a science project. It is immensely important that first bottle gets nursed into the later afternoon. Because the second bottle has to get me into the evening. Because I'm trying to get to 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, maybe even 11 o'clock at night for once, to pass out and catch a good enough sleep to wake up and not have to drink like that ever again. And it says the mind and body are marvellous mechanisms. I drank like that for 2 more years. 2 more years of jails, institutions and death. And I started to then turn up to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, drunk. Jail, I was going to jail for stupid stuff like we all do. Institutions, of course, I'm waking up in the drunk tank. I'm being hospitalised. I'm in detoxes. I'm now ending up in the lockdown psychiatric unit regularly. That became normal for me. Death is next. Death is close. And death is welcomed, man. You can't scare us with death at this stage of drinking. It's like, bring it on, man. But alcoholism doesn't have the dignity to take us quickly. It might mess with some of you for years, if not decades. My fear is not dying an alcoholic death. My fear is living an alcoholic life, one miserable day at a time. Here's how I got sober. I came to one morning and there was no vodka under my bed. That had never, ever happened to me before. I took it as a sign that this is the day I'm going to kill myself. And I was fine with that. I'd tried to kill myself 3 months prior. 3 months prior, all my roommates were downtown partying, having excluded me, of course, as usual, which made for more self-pity. I'm already maudlin drunk, and I remembered one of them as an arsenal of weapons. He's a bit of a maniac, and so I jimmied the door, broke into his bedroom. I find shotguns, AKs. Now, I'm English, I don't quite know what I'm doing with a gun, but I find a loaded revolver. It's loaded. I stumble into the living room and sit down. I put it in my mouth. It's cold. It's heavy on my teeth. And I think to myself, wait, do you blow the back of your head off or do you shoot up through the roof of your mouth? And as I'm thinking this through at midnight, the thought came to me, hey, Darren, it's midnight. If you pull the trigger right now, you'll definitely wake the neighbours up. You know what I mean? I'm too polite for that shit. So I throw the gun back in the bedroom. Another month after that, I found a bottle of pills in my other roommate's bedroom. I googled it. This should have killed a goddamn elephant, man. I took the whole bottle of pills, washed it down with a whole bottle of vodka, and I came to the next morning. I had a rotten stomach for about a month. Some of us don't die, do? But today's the day I'm going to do it. I'm in my bedroom for hours. There's a calmness about me. I'm fine with what's going on. About 10 o'clock, I go outside and my car, miraculously, my car is there. That movie, Dude, Where's Your Car? Should have been about me, man. I go outside, there's me beat up shitty vehicle. I jump in it. I drive 20 minutes up the mountain road, up the 154 to something called Cold Springs Bridge. Santa Barbara's highest bridge, a popular suicide spot in my area, a bit like the Golden Gate. I park my car, I walk to the centre of the bridge, and before I go off, I pause because I know it's going to kill me mum. And in that pause, grace comes in the form of a man who told me the truth in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to share inappropriately. I used to tell everybody, I'm going to kill myself. This thing doesn't work. He pulled me off to one side and said, hey, come here, Darren. You might well kill yourself. You won't be the first and you won't be the last. But you can't say that Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work. And I got angry because he's telling me the truth. I said, I've been coming here for a year, old man. He said, well, first of all, you should come sober. It works better. Fair enough. He said, and then, because every time I come out of these institutions, I'm sober. He said, in a drunk like you, you need to get a sponsor and work the 12 steps and have a psychic change or a spiritual awakening. Now, I had two big secrets in AA that many of you now have. Two big secrets. One was I didn't have a sponsor. And if I did, it was in name only. And the other one, I wasn't working any steps. And you lot were talking about it all the time. And if I'm not doing those two things, I am not doing Alcoholics Anonymous. You're just checking it out, man. You're checking it out. And so on that bridge, I made a decision. I sincerely took this position. I said to myself, okay, I'm going to go back to that AA bullshit. And I'm going to do those stupid 12 steps. And when they don't work, I'm going to find that man. We're going to have a little chit-chat. I'm going to take him off the bridge with me, right? Now, I know enough about my alcoholism that I can't just come skipping into the rooms going, where's Gabe? He knows what he's doing. Take me through the... No, I need to be, once again, medically detoxed. So I jump in my car, drive 20 minutes down the mountain road to go to Santa Barbara Cottage Hospital emergency room, and I park in my usual spot. I'd been there four times already that year. It was only April. As I pull into the car park, I sideswipe the car next to me. Just as I'm pulling in, damage is done. There's a big noise. The police are already there. It's the emergency room. They're around the corner. They come over to see what's going on. It's about 11 a.m. I'm sober as a judge. I said, sorry, sir, that was my fault. This is my car. I have my ID, but I need to go into the... emergency room. And one of them goes behind me. He's almost going to root for me. He's wondering what's going on. The other one comes right up to me. He's about to say something. Then he says, whoa, have you been drinking? I thought, that's a weird first question. I said, no, sir, have you? They don't like that approach. He said, you reek of alcohol. I said, I have not had a drink today. He said, well, you're doing some field sobriety tests. I'm like, okay. For 25 minutes, he makes me do these field sobriety tests. I do them perfectly. He's pissed, dude. He looks at his colleague. His colleague goes like this. He's, oh, you're doing some more. I do another 15 minutes perfectly. Eventually, he says, you're going to blow into this device. I blow into his breathalyzer, and I blow a 0.32. Now, I haven't even had a drink yet. I am waking up at a 0.32, then I'm drinking my two big bottles of vodka. These two cops, they cannot believe it, dude. They cannot believe it. And I start to tell them, I see them getting the handcuffs out, and I'd been confident until then, and then I knew what was coming. I'm like, wait a minute, what are you doing? He said, turn around, you're going to jail. Now, have you ever detoxed in jail? Holy shit. I said, I started to panic and I started to use the language of Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank God a miracle starts to take place. I said, David, if you take me to jail right now, sir, I will kill somebody. I said, I'm small, but I'm fucking dangerous, dude. So of course, I start to spill the beans on myself. I said, I need to go back to the 12-step program. I know who, I'm going to get one of these solid sponsors. I'm going to do everything I need to. I'm going to pray. I'm going to do all this stuff. I'm going to get commitments. And the miracle starts to happen. Of course, they arrest me, but they don't take me to jail. They take me to the local police station, which felt so, I'll be forever grateful for that, so much safer to me. Now I'm handcuffed in the back of the squad car. We're going to the police station. Now we're getting along great, chit-chatting and stuff. They actually radio ahead to their colleagues. They're so excited. They radio ahead and say, hey, we've got this Irishman. And he blew a .32. I said, I'm English, you moron. They take me to the police station. They book me in. They fingerprint me. I swear to God, I was there for 2 or 3 hours. Everybody who worked in that large police station came down to chit-chat with me. Because of how sober I was. So now somebody that they know and trust is going to come and get me and take me directly back to the lockdown psychiatric unit. Because that's where I need to go. But so what? I've gotten drunk twice on the way home from there. Literally, so what? The difference is I have hit bottom. Now then, hitting bottom for me gets misrepresented in the rooms a lot. Hidden bottom, and ask anyone that sponsors many people. Hidden bottom is very, very precise. So if you're new, listen to this. Hidden bottom is when you ask somebody for help and follow through with all the directions. The rest is just a bunch of bullshit of your and my war story. Some of my guys are telling me, no, Darren, you don't understand. I went to prison, mate. I went to prison. I've never been to prison. They said, yeah. I said, well, what was it like? He said, well, I was involved in gang warfare. Stabbing people, drinking Pruno we made out of the bed frame. I said, dude, you're just doing the same old shit. That's not hitting bottom. Some girl said to me, Darren, I sold my body so I could get high 10 minutes later. So that's a very sad story, love. But you haven't hit bottom. You're doing the same old stuff. I was going to prove I'd hit bottom. Now, so they take me to the lockdown psychiatric unit. Now, it sounds a little bit depressing, doesn't it? The lockdown psychiatric unit. But I love me some lockdown psychiatric unit. I love it, because you know what's coming my way? A lot of narcotics are coming my way. And I know I need to be detoxed and I need the good stuff, right? Before I get serious about this sobriety thing. I need dumbing down, man. So they take me there, a security guard takes you in the other elevator that most people don't know about. He takes you up, clicks you out, puts you in, you open the phone, they click you through that door. That door shuts and then they click you through another. Now, I know exactly what I need to do. Now, well, and I know the drill. We all know the drill when you go in this lockdown psychiatry unit. You have to go and see the little woman in the window, right, to get as many drugs as is humanly possible. Now, and here's the other thing you've got to do as well. You know what you got to do when you're in the lockdown psychiatric unit? You got to go and find yourself a little girlfriend in the lockdown psychiatric unit. That's what you all do, don't you lie to me. So I go up to the little window and I'm straight up there. She knows me and I know her. I said, hello, Mary. How are you doing, my love? Did you have a nice Christmas? Mary, I'm going to need my usual cocktail. I would like 118 Valiums, 2 pints of Seroquel, whatever they are on the top shelf, those pink things look amazing. And I would like the penthouse suite for once, but if that's taken up, I'll have my usual room. She's just shaking her head. She gives me as many drugs as is humanly possible. And I take all the drugs and woof, 10 minutes later, woof, loaded to the gills. I wanted to kill myself 3 hours ago. Loaded to the gills. Ready to start judging people again. Look at all these losers in the lockdown psychiatric unit. Look at them all. Oh, my God. Mary takes me belt off me. She takes me laces off me so I don't hang myself in this happy place. So where do all the girls hang out? They hang out in the day room, don't they? They're in the TV room. So I go to my room. What you used to do back then is get undressed and you put a hospital gown on, make sure it's tied at the back. Loaded to the gills, going looking for my next victim. They're all in the day room, the TV room. Go wandering down the hallway. loaded to the gills. I open the door, slam it against the door so everybody looks my way so I can survey the weirdos. Everybody looks my way. I'm like, look at all these fools in here. There's a girl over here banging her head against the wall. There's a guy over here dribbling on himself. And then I see her. Oh, my God, she's gorgeous. I see her. She's all on her own doing laps around the couch. All on her own. She's got this black hair, but it's in front of her face. She's got unusually long arms. All she's doing is this. Walking around the couch. I'm like, oh, my God, look at her. Oh, my God. So I go in there and I grab her by the hand. We do some laps together. We form... She looks like that girl out of the movie. What's it called? The fucking... The Ring or some shit. We fall madly and desperately in love. Then they detox me from the alcohol by giving me all the drugs. And then they detox me from the drugs. And 12 days later, they pop me out sober. One more time. So what? This time I'd hit bottom. It was a Wednesday afternoon and I did not take a drink, which is an absolute miracle. I went to a very, very powerful men's stag called the Junkyard Dogs, my home group. There were 80 men outside this meeting hall. They're all smoking fags, drinking coffee, having a good time. Dozens of them were properly armed with the facts about themselves and the illness. I went straight up to the first one I saw. I said, hey, Mike, I just got out today, dude. Just got out again right now. I'm going to get drunk tonight, man. You know it. I know it. What do I need to do? And he looked at me and said, wow, Darren, are you sober right now? I said, yeah. He'd barely seen me sober that whole year. He said, oh, my God, let's get into action right now. Normally we do some reading. We might do the page 60, the ABCs. He said, let's do a third step prayer right now, right here. Listen, I don't pray. I don't pray on my knees. I don't believe in God and I hate religion. I said, what do you mean, Mike, in front of these 80 men? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. I said, okay, because the no had been beaten out of me. Darren wasn't too cool for school anymore. Darren was about to conform to the process. We did a third step prayer in front of everybody. We went into that meeting. I'll always remember that meeting. Somebody had a grand mal seizure in that meeting right behind me. Have you ever seen an alcoholic grand mal seizure where they lock up and go red and stop breathing over like a 2-minute period and then just pass out? It is one of the ugliest things I've ever seen in my life. I've had many grand mal seizures. I've just never seen one. You know what I mean? After that meeting, I went home and I wrote 100 names on my resentment inventory. 100. I said to my sponsor, said, I said, you want me to write down every mofo that's done me wrong? Give me a pen. 100 names. I passed out. I came to the next day. It was 5 a.m. I'm shaking and baking. I wrote 100 more names. 6 a.m., I'm going to take a drink. 6 a.m., I called my sponsor. He gave me my next column and saved my life. I called him 12 times that day to finish all 3 inventories. I went to his house the next day and we did my 5th step. It took us 3.5 hours. As he's sending me home for my hour of review, he gave me a big old hug and said, Darren, this is amazing. This has never happened to me before. I said, I'm glad you feel good, Mike. I feel like shit, dude. He's all, don't worry, man. Trust in the process. The next day, I went to his house and we did step 6 and 7. Step 6 and 7? I have no idea what step 6 and 7 were. Nobody knows what step 6 and 7 are. But I had the willingness and the humility, and I desperately wanted to move on, and we did. The next day I did my 8th step. It was easy. I already had my list. I just had to annoyingly transfer my list, and I added to my list. On my 5th and 6th day of sobriety, I went around Santa Barbara and I made 15 to 20 amends. 15 to 20 amends, and I was lit up like a Christmas tree. I was rocketed into the fourth dimension. My little English heart filled up so much, I thought it was going to burst. Everything made sense. I'm like, oh my God, this is why you lot on the committee are so into this thing. This is why you guys that sponsor people are grateful alcoholics. This is all makes sense. You must have this feeling. Oh my God, this is what you're calling God. You want to call this God? I don't give a shit, because I saw, I felt, I believed. I felt so good. I got up the next day and I went to Foodland liquor store. I said, I need to speak to the manager. I said, sir, I live less than one block away from here, and I've got to tell you, I've been a terribly bad drunk for years, and over this last year I've been stealing your vodka almost every single day. I said, I'll never steal from you or anyone else ever again. I said, it comes to $2,750. I said, I'll never steal from you or anyone else ever again. I said, I've just started work 2 days ago. It's Friday. I've started work 2 days ago, first time in years. There's $25. I'll be back every Friday with $25 until I've paid that whole amount off and any interest you determine. I said, is there anything else I can do to make this right? And he looked at me and he just said, wow. And I looked at him and said, wow. And I floated off to make some more financial amends. I couldn't believe how good it felt to give you your money back. I said to my sponsor, what's next? His sponsor went, oh my God, Darren, this is amazing. He said, steps 10 and 11. I said, 10 and 11, what's that? He said, yeah, step 10, I'll show you what to do right here, right now, to postpone the punishment of. Then I'll show you step 11, what to do in the morning, what to do at night. We're going to add some meditation. You're already praying your little English ass off. We're going to add 2 minutes of meditation and 2 minutes of reviewing your day at night. Now, he already knew I was a recovered alcoholic. And thank God he knew I'm the worst drunk he's ever met as well. And he knew I need the full strength program. He knew that I need to work what I call the guaranteed version of sobriety. Guaranteed, including a little bit of meditation. Guaranteed. You can't leave out a fifth step because you have ADHD, can you? No. You can't leave out a ninth step because you don't feel you can do it. You don't have to. No. So I don't know when it became okay or cool to miss out the 11th step. Now, I don't like meditation at all. I dislike it and push again, but I don't want to do it. I'm just like you. In fact, it's taken me 19 and a half years to go from 2 minutes meditation to 10 minutes meditation. 19 and a half years. But God, hey, God loves him a little trier. God loves him a little trier. My God is cool, man. My God is cool. My potty mouth. My God loves me. My God is up there laughing his bearded ass off at me down here in my bedroom doing my shitty prayer meditation. Laughing his ass off, he is. He's saying, look at that little fuck down there. Look at that little wanker down there doing his shitty prayer meditation. But then he says, ooh, you know what? You know what? Check. Give that little wanker another day of sobriety. Yeah, that's how cool my God is. He doesn't care that I'm a potty mouth man from Manchester. He cares about my actions. He cares about my helping others, which I do relentlessly. Relentlessly. Dude, steps 10 and 11 are like the keys to the kingdom. Steps 10 and 11 are so simple, you won't do it. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? Not you lot, I mean your sponsees, right? Isn't that the truth? Only an alcoholic will burn his life to the ground to come running to a 12-step program just to resist the 12 steps. What is wrong with us? I think we've got alcoholism. I am in, dude. I am sold on the plan outlined in this book. And I have to work. Some of us are sicker than others. I'm like Gabe, you know, I'm really sick and I have to work a very good program. I'm not just because some people could go to one or two meetings a week and they're giddy and spiritual. That's not my experience. I have alcoholism. Why are we still coming with all them years of sobriety? Why are we still coming to Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I still have alcoholism every single day. Alcoholism is a highly chronic, fatal, progressive illness, sometimes accompanied by alcohol. My alcoholism isn't out there doing push-ups. It's there in the morning waiting for me. And I'd better get treated first thing. And so I have to work a very, very, very good program just to be normal, dude. Just to be normal. I sponsor so many people in Santa Barbara. I do so much AA. I should be the Dalai freaking Lama or some shit. But no, I do all that just to be another bozo on the bus. Just another bozo on the bus. And I'll finish with this. What is the payoff for this? What is the reason we're doing AA and working a good program? It's to get a full heart. It's to have that experience that we've entered the world of the Spirit. I've had many. We have entered the world of Spirit moments just like you that have been around and are active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I should give a talk just on the hundreds of those experiences, which are amazing. But I'll finish with this last one. So I was speaking about 10 years ago at an Akipor convention. These things are madness, dude. If you've never been to a Waipor event, you've got to go because they are annoying as fuck and fun as thingy. All rolled into one. 3,000 of these young maniacs have taken over a Hilton complex in the Bay Area. Now, many of them were hospitalized because they've overdosed on Red Bull. But don't worry, they gave them a monster drip and they were just fine. Now, I'm the closeout speaker, so a lot of these little wankers have already gone home, so that made my resentment inventory. Now, it's a Sunday morning. They've been up all night, so there's about 600 or 800 of them left. I'm sat on the stage. I'm about to give a talk. She's going to give a talk before me. Everybody's looking at us. About 5 minutes before we speak, everyone's looking at us on the stage. And I don't know who she is. She's messing about texting on her phone. And I'm thinking that's super rude. But obviously it's none of my business. So I get involved right away. The fuck are you doing? She's having a problem, right? She's having a problem. Now, I'm from Santa Barbara. We're in the Bay Area, which is a 6-hour car ride away. She's texting her sponsor in L.A., Her sponsor in LA got sober 21 years previously. Her and 20 people in a co-ed sober house got sober, except most all of them either relapsed, went to jail, or died. Just the usual stuff, right? Her and this other guy, two of them stayed sober for 90 days. He then moved to Maui, Hawaii, stayed sober for 21 years, did AA over there, raised a family, got married, had two kids. His two boys, aged 20 and 19, are on the mainland going to school, dying of untreated alcoholism. The only number he has is the woman he got sober with. And so he texts her, she texts her, and she looks at me and says, well, I need a male number. Can I give him your number? I said, of course, I'll give him a number. We give our talks, everything goes great. So now I'm about to get in the car and drive back to Santa Barbara, right? Now, when I speak out of town and I'm driving, usually I'll take my tough guys with me, you know what I mean? I take the tough guys, all the tattooed up tough guys, you know, the sleeved up, tattoos on the necks. Well, you never know what's going to happen. You might run into some of them any fuckers, you know what I mean? So, all you NA guys are going to come up to me after the meeting, I know. I'm ready. Now, we're all in the car driving down the freeway going back to Santa Barbara. And I call this guy. And he's on speakerphone and he answers the phone. I say, hey, my name's Darren. I'm coming back from a conference. I was told to give you a call. And this guy just starts crying, dude. He just starts crying his eyes out. And he can't catch his breath. And he can't stop crying. And it's just such a moment of humility. And I want to cry too, but I'm with my tough guys, you know what I mean? I look at him, I went, wait a minute, dude, are you crying? His old neck tattoos, and he's crying. And then I look in the rearview mirror, I'm like, oh my God, are you crying? You've got tattoos on your face, you pussy. We're all crying. This guy eventually catches his breath. He said, Darren, I've never asked anything of anybody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but if my boys need the hand of AA, please let it be there. I said, I'm in, dude. I'm in. I'm pretty well connected in many states, and I know the people who are. What's going on? Where are they? What can I do? He said, they both attend Santa Barbara City College. I said, I work at Santa Barbara City College. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Dude, this is for fun and for free. This is the best show on earth. Alcoholics Anonymous never gets stale. It never gets stale. We get stale. If you get stale, mix it up. Go to that different meeting. Sponsor someone. Do another mini fifth step. What about those amends? Get your eight-step list out. Alcoholics Anonymous never gets stale, but we do. And we can do something about it. This is the greatest show on earth. This is the best soap opera there's ever been. Wait till you start sponsoring guys and gals, and they'll have these little mini nightmare soap operas going on all around it. This is for fun and for free. This is amazing. I'll leave you with this. If you're new and you're struggling with the whole God thing like I was, maybe you can think of this. Religion might be for those people that are trying to avoid going to hell. Spirituality is for people that have been to hell. Thank you all very much.